Welcome back, everyone. We're talking with Barbara Peterson from FarmWars.info about her experience with GMOs and her work against it. And continuing a little bit here on the labeling issue with the Prop 37 there over in California, that was defeated, of course. But which is interesting because it shows even that small measure didn't work out. But maybe you're onto something there. Maybe this is a way to keep the discussion focused. Not around if we should have or if GMOs should be in the United States or not. It's more of a discussion, how, you know, should we label it or should we not? It's a classic way of kind of derailing the debate. I mean, you know, it's not a conversation of is he guilty or not? Did he kill 3 or 5 people? You know, you take it in that direction right away. So kind of, so you derail it. But nonetheless, then, what do you make of some of the things that can be done against the whole issue in itself? I mean, how do you approach that subject of trying to ban it all out together? Is it too much of a task to take on at once? Or do you think that this labeling thing could be it's a small, you know, part in the process, but slowly and slowly, you know, more and more could begin to come towards that situation where finally people you know, decide not to have it. How do you think we should approach it?
Well, you see, the theory that if you make people aware and that they will make the decision to not buy it, well, that's actually, you know, pretty good theory. However, if you understand that GMOs are continuing to spread, look at the wheat issue. You know, there was rogue GMO wheat that was found in Oregon, and GMO wheat wasn't even approved. They did trial plantings in 2005, and then it was 2013. And where did this rogue seed, you know, where did this come from? Well, then come to find out that it was actually just the manufacturer of the seed said, oh, expect 2% contamination. So we're getting to the point where contamination is a given. When you buy seed from a company, you can expect 2% contamination, and that contamination can be GMO. So what we have is kind of a race. Okay, we've got the labeling people saying, well, we'll just get it labeled and that'll make people aware, and then eventually, then the tipping point, and then they won't want it. Well, meanwhile, back on the farm, contamination is spreading and spreading and spreading and spreading. So then what's going to happen? Okay, well, we finally got it labeled. But, well, let's see. Now, what does non-GMO mean, really? Well, according to the non-GMO project, they allow up to 0.9% contamination if you are going to be labeled as non-GMO project verified. They allow contamination. Oh, okay. And the Organic Trade Association, I believe that was it, states that GMO-free in the future, you know, said it's very, very difficult to obtain 100% purity under GMO-free designation. So mm-hmm. In the future, we might want to consider raising that up to 3% acceptable contamination under the GMO-free designation. Yeah. Okay. So in the future, you might go to a store and see GMO-free, and you'll still get whatever level of contamination that they have decided to allow under that designation. So it's not really GMO-free. It is allow the contamination level allowable up to a certain point. Oh, oops. Well, we can't guarantee only 3%. Well, now it's going to be 4%. And a couple of years later, 5%.
Yeah.
Pretty soon it'll be absolutely meaningless. So when I say that the labeling issue is a distraction, What I'm really saying is that it is, if that's what you're counting on, the labeling to save us, it's not going to work. Because if you do not address banning, if you do not understand that what's going to happen is it's going to be a complete takeover and coexistence is not possible, then it's a lost cause. So the banning issue is absolutely necessary. And it's almost like a lot of the labeling people have given up on a ban. They don't want, we don't like the word ban. Oh, that's a very negative word. Nobody likes it. You know, it's too harsh. No. You know, and they'll go into the coexistence mode and they'll say, oh no, because coexistence is a bad word. I'm sorry, but if you're for labeling and you're not addressing that this needs to be banned, then you are for coexistence. You have given up. And that's the hard, cold fact of it. Or you are making so much money by selling contaminated, labeled, USD-certified organic stuff, and those products that you're selling are being manufactured by a company who does both GMOs and organics. I'm sorry, you're into coexistence. And coexistence doesn't work.
Yeah. It's a very difficult issue. I mean, I agree with you in that regard. It's kind of one of those situations. Either you have it or you don't. You know, there's no kind of in between there because of the contamination. I mean, again, we've talked with Jeffrey Smith about this. Once it's in the biosphere, it's there, you know, and seeds, they blow around. You can't have control of it. It will just happen. And the nature of some of these seeds, of course, seems to be that they also, you know, some of them anyway, not the Terminator seeds specifically, because they die after the first, growth cycle or whatever you want to call that. And then you have to plant new ones again. But other seeds, they seem to take over and they dominate fields. With the famous case of the farmer in Canada, I forget his name right now, but he got sued basically by Monsanto because of the fact that some spillage occurred in his field, and then they claimed, oh, those are also our seeds. We've copyrighted them, so now you need to pay us a fee for your usage of it, although this was a big accident, of course. But it's how can this be banned, and how can the continuous enforcement of it be implemented, considering, you know, the track record of government, specifically with the relationship with the corporate monopoly, who work as hard as they can to use the government to remain the monopoly and restrict, you know, other competitors with red tapes and fees and tariffs and everything else to allow a more competitive market in that regard. These are, I mean, at the end of it, I mean, as I see it, these are criminals in charge of the whole machinery. This is the Dr. Nose of this world, if you will. And if they want to, you know, plant their global eugenics GMO seed, they're going to do it. And how can it be prevented with force by other people? What do you think about that? It's a difficult nut to crack, of course, Barbara, but we have to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. It is difficult. And in my opinion, it all starts out with the individual. You know, like I said, a drop of water is nothing in and of itself, but if it continues to beat on a rock, it will wear the rock down. I want to be one of those drops of water. We all are a little drop of water. Every single one of us has the power in our own lives to ban GMOs. The more awareness that we, you know, get out there, the more people become understand what it is. I go into a supermarket it's not really a supermarket, you know, a small town. I go into the store and I start talking to people, and, you know, I'll be in the produce aisle with somebody, you know, next to the organic aisle or whatever, you know, and I'll look at it and I say, oh, you know, ew, you don't want to eat that. Well, why not? Because it's GMO. What's a GMO? Oh, and I give a little short explanation of what a GMO is and what glyphosate is and all that, you know, and they, oh, okay. And then you go on and you talk to somebody else. I don't stop talking. Once you know this stuff, know about this stuff, once you know the truth, you have to spread it. If you don't spread the truth, then you're complicit in the lie. And that is the bottom line. I'm sorry, it's a hard, cold fact. We have to keep on telling people about this stuff. Once you start banning it in your own lives and you start getting more awareness, then people will start understanding. The farmers have got to stop doing it. They have really seriously have to understand that when they sign on to the cartel, then they're going to be owned by the cartel. And I think a lot of the information that has to get out there is the fact that you can grow other ways and become even more productive than getting in on the pesticide. It's a vicious cycle. Okay, I have horses. Now, a long time ago, I used to worm those horses with Zamectrin and all this other stuff. That was the new one, the Zamectrin, because there's three or four classes of wormers now, Zamectrin being in its own class. And worms develop a resistance. It's common knowledge. You use the same wormer month after month, they will develop a resistance. This is the same thing with pesticides that you spray on the crops. They develop, the insects develop a resistance. The weeds develop a resistance. So I was rotating. I was doing everything. Now, Zamectrin came on the market, and it was touted as the best thing, you know, since white bread. And it came on the market, and everybody was using it, and it cost $20 a tube. And oh boy, you know, and it said, there will be no resistance with Zamectrin. This is the miracle one. Well, yeah, now you know what it's selling for. It's selling for $2.50 a tube, and nobody's using it because the resistance is so high, because everybody was using it. And now it's useless. It's absolutely useless. I now use diatomaceous earth to worm my animals. Okay, now the farmers have to understand that this is what's going on, and they should understand. The old timers around here understand that concept. They understand that you have a resistance that's going to build up. And if you continue to use the same pesticides over and over and over again, pretty soon your yield is going to go down. After, you know, approximately 3 years, your yield is going to go down significantly. And you're going to be stuck buying the expensive seed, buying all more and more and more and more dangerous pesticides, and just getting in debt even more. So once the farmers realize, and actually the resistance is working against Monsanto, because now they're going after it's either Monsanto or one of the other ones that they're, you know, in league with, a 2,4-D. And, okay, I go to this one guy. He's a little old man, and he knows what he's doing. And he makes, grows oat pea hay out here, and he grows it without the use of pesticides. And now occasionally we'll get a little, you know, crop of weeds in there and stuff, you know, but we just deal with it. No big deal. I, you know, toss that out and feed the rest of the hay. But he's doing that on an individual basis. Now, if more farmers, and he's trying to spread the word, and he's giving his seeds to other people who are starting to do the same thing. The younger guys, they're being brainwashed. They're being brainwashed by the universities, brainwashed by the schools who they're getting grants from Monsanto. They've got huge biotechnology, you know, courses which say, oh, it's perfectly safe, blah, 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 and all that. The whole agribusiness model, like you said, is being pushed by the government. We as individuals have to stand up. We have to start sharing with the other individuals that are important. We have to create communities that are GMO free. And the more people start standing up, the more we start developing remediation techniques for the soil to get us out of this mess that we're in. You know, I've got an inner hope right in the center of my being that we are going to, you know, be victorious here. Not necessarily forcing everybody to want them to do, but my saying is, you have a right to swing your fist. Yeah, I have no doubt you have a right to swing your fist, but where my nose begins, your fist better stop. So if you can't contain what you're doing, and in the case of genetic modification, you can't contain it, then you've got to stop doing it. And the more people that stand up and understand that, the more that the farmers are going to have to back down and start saying no to Monsanto. And that's what has to happen. It has to happen. And more people understand, they start starting to get sick over this stuff, and you start connecting the dots. Well, I have irritable bowel syndrome. Oh, excuse me, glyphosate, irritable bowel syndrome.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people aren't going to. They aren't going to listen, and they're going to continue on and on and on. But we have to create, through our own actions, our own personal choices, to create our, you know, basic non-GMO worlds, and just keep hoping that the spread will get bigger and bigger and bigger. I'm not unrealistic. You know, there is evil in this world, and it, you know, at this point, it is going to, you know, it's getting very, very strong, and in a lot of instances, it's prevailing. But I also believe that if you're in a dark room and you light a match, that match will light that dark room, and there's nothing that the darkness can do but get away. It's gone. When you light that match, the darkness is gone. And we just have to continue on an individual basis to do that and fight the good fight. And that's, you know, that's my hope, that we eventually will. It might get bad. It might get real bad. But eventually we will win.
Exactly. I mean, this is my take on it as well, Barbara. I mean, it has to be on an individual level where people are informed, they make the right choices, and they live by example. And as you say, they share the information, they talk when they can, and speak to people who are interested in listening and everything else. Because, you know, despite subsidies and artificial propping up by government, I think eventually, if no one buys these products, it will fail on a monetary level where the industry no longer can support itself. It's going to become monetarily, financially impossible. So those who produce the food will have to choose other sources for their produce. Those who sell it, who own stores, what have you, will have to choose other sources, work with the people who are out there, you know, offering alternatives. And again, everyone who touch this stuff, the GMO, don't support them. Don't buy from them. Find an there's always options out there. Find something else, or create those options. There's tons of, I think, business opportunities within this field, because there are so few options at this stake, you know, so get in on it, try to do something good, change it from the inside. I think there's no level of, you know, government that will keep up doing the work for us. As I said before, the criminals will push to utilize the power that comes with an all-powerful government who can enforce the laws that they make ultimately with force. It's unfortunate, but that's just the case of it. I guess I'm just amazed that there are so many people still that want to give the institution, i.e. the government, who have helped to create this problem and maintain the problem, more power. I mean, we can't rely on this for them to fix it for us. This is, just as you say, an individual choice, and it has to begin and, I think, end on that level. That's the only way I see out of it.
Yes, I agree 100%. I think more people now are getting very, very disillusioned with government. It's when you've got a government that has absolutely no problem, you know, spending how many umpteen, you know, billions, trillions of dollars going to war, and yet on the home front is cutting food stamps for the poorest among us.
Yeah.
There's some disillusionment going on. I mean, the veil is starting to lift on the little man behind the curtain in The Wizard of Oz.
Oh, yeah. And it's about time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Well, it's just amazing. How do you see this kind of evolving, I guess, in the future? If you, I don't know if you have a crystal ball, but let's say if you do, if you look into that, how do you see that this plays out? Will there be a battle of sorts over this on a you know, market level, where they will basically split up, where you will have, you know, the GMO crowd and the non-GMO crowd, and hopefully eventually through information and good dissemination of that information and science on top of it, you can steer this ship, if you will, in the right direction, or is it going to be more difficult than that? More fights to deal with. What do you think?
Well, I think we're already, you know, to the point where there's the non-GMO crowd is starting to get larger, which is one of the reasons why Monsanto has decided to enter the organic market.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you can see that we are having an impact. There is an impact. And then, you know, and I see that getting stronger and stronger. So we're really going to have to keep our eyes open for the subterfuge, like Monsanto, organic, whatever's. Nothing that company makes I will ever trust, and that's just the way it is. It's, and I think we've got to get in a world that that's becoming more disconnected. There's no more personal interaction. Used to be, you used to go someplace and you'd have a personal interaction with that person, and you'd say, "Oh, what's in that?" And they'd tell you, and they would know what's in that sack of feed. "Oh, I got it from such and such a farmer, and oh yeah, it's got this, 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 and this." And now you go and they say, "Well, I don't know. How am I supposed to know?" We've got to start asking questions of the people, demanding answers. Asking questions and demanding answers from the people that we buy things from. And that starts raising the awareness. And yes, it's going to be a big fight. And yes, it's going to be difficult. But if we start individually and we start, you know, understanding it and can just talk naturally about it without, you know, having to go, "Oh, well, I didn't know that. Oh," and then, you know, run off and consult, you know, our computer. We got to get one-on-one. We've got to get back to reality. And there's going to, of course, be the people that are going in that direction and the people that are going in the other direction. I believe that for at least as long as I live, there is going to be that battle. I have no illusions about that. But I do know that more people and more people are becoming aware. And the more that we can do this, it's hard to talk to people. It's hard to go up to somebody in a grocery store that you don't know and start talking about it. But I was very, very happy to see. I went into the store. I only go to the store about once a month, so it's kind of a big deal for me. And so I went in and I went around, hung out in the organic section, and I looked, and here was this teenager. And he looked to be maybe about, 15, 16. And he was with his mom, and there was an older couple there with him, and they were talking. And he was lecturing the people about how they should buy organic because of all the pesticides and all the other stuff. And they were listening, and he was really, really knowledgeable. And I was like, "This is a teenager. Oh, I'm so happy." So I went around, and I, you know, went around to the other part, and I came back, and I looked again, and he was still there, and they were still talking. And I was like, "Oh, yes, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. And, you know, little things like that. And the more that happens, but we've got to start learning to communicate because we're becoming separated more and more. If you want to do something, you do it online. If you want to communicate with somebody, you do it online. You don't even have to look at them. If you want to talk, if you see kids sitting in a big group with their cell phones texting, and they're not even talking with each other, they're just texting. This is the disconnect, and it's being fostered, definitely being fostered. So this is what we have to start working against, and it starts with the children. It really does. If we want to raise generations of children that understand what's going on and have a connection with other people and with the earth, we have to start at home. We can't expect other people to teach them. We have to teach them ourselves. I'm an advocate of homeschooling.
Yeah.
It's so imperative, because if we don't take individual responsibility, and if we don't teach our children right, then somebody else is going to teach them, and it's not necessarily going to be right.
Yeah, absolutely.
We're going to have Monsanto teaching our children, Dow teaching our children. You know, we're going to have the vaccine industry teaching our children. We have to do it ourselves. So we have a responsibility to become informed and teach them. And they're not little children. I'm telling you, we get stupider as we get older. You know, we do. Children, they're very, very open. They're very receptive. They don't have all of this garbage piled on them yet. So They're wonderful. And the fact that we send them off to a factory to be rubber stamped in whatever way that the corporations want them to go so that they will be a good little cog in the machine. They'll be a good little worker and they'll produce this widget and that widget and this GMO widget and that GMO widget and think everything's okay. And that's exactly what's happening. So we have to take that back. And the stronger we get at taking that back, the more resistance we're going to run into. But the more resistance we run into, the more we know we're making a dent.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's hope.
Definitely. Let's kind of juxtapose this a little bit to the situation in the EU. And I don't know how familiar and aware you are of what is happening there, but to me it seems like a reverse. If I could simplify the situation radically, I would say something like this: that GMOs was from the get-go, go ahead, you know, in the US. It was like, just plant it, let's do it, just open experimentation, like kind of like right away. The EU, on the other hand, claimed that they had caution in their principles, like, we don't know if it's dangerous, let's hold off, let's do, you know, more scientific experiments and stuff like that. And so what has happened consequently is that in the US, the reactions against this have blossomed and bloomed, and you have a tremendous movement out that is anti-GMO. So it's been quick and kind of just a reaction to it right away. In the EU, it's now slowly, I mean, some of the tests that they've been trying to do in terms of, testing out the waters a little bit in terms of what the people are ready to accept have been rejected, certain of them. They've been like, yeah, okay, we don't want that yet. Some of the companies had to leave, you know, Germany. They decided to set up, you know, experimentation labs over in the US, I think. But it seems to me right now that there's a slow incremental process here in Europe to allow in these produce. It's something that the World Health Organization, or Trade, was it? Trade Organization decided mm-hmm. many, many, many years ago, where I remember we linked it up on the website, probably 10 years ago, if not even more, where they said that, you know, basically Europe at the end of it have to approve these produce. It's just, how are we going to do it? So what's happened is that there's a slow tactic here of a Fabian society tactics, if you will, where you boil the frog slowly. In for example, in Sweden, there have been BASF, genetically modified potatoes have been approved. Some of the soy has been approved. Some, you know, certain herbs here and there. And there's been a new law in place as well, which I need to look into this more, but it has something to do with the fact how things are being protected under certain secrecy laws now. It was something a combined law between Denmark and Sweden, and I'm sorry I don't have all the details on that as of yet, but what I'm getting at here then, in a long roundabout way, is that it's almost more difficult in the EU eventually if this goes far enough, because now the what they claim is a scientific slow implementation process have been so gradual, and they have the perception therefore that, okay, it's safe because we've gone this about in a what they claim is a rational, scientific, slow process kind of thing. So is this something that you've noticed? And it's almost like a flip side, that if the pressure becomes big enough in the US, eventually they might be able to throw it out there, and the main of the production will happen over in the European Union. I don't know what your take is on that, but I see this two very, very different methodologies and implementations. And at some level, it seems that they're going to balance up and you're going to have an equal amount on both continents or something like that. Very strange, isn't it?
Yeah. See what good labeling is doing?
Exactly. and again, the slow scientific process, it's all going to take care of us. It's going to save us. You know, all the European, you know, EFSA, all the authorities are going to protect us and make sure it's all, you know, legit and healthy and legal and all that. But it doesn't help. That's the bottom line.
Yeah, that is. And there's even a tomato, a purple tomato they're considering growing. You know, the EU, and then you've got the TPP, TAFTA, and once it becomes a barrier to trade, then if you don't accept the stuff, then, it's a barrier to trade. And, well, look, the animals have been eating it for so long. Oh, so we can't show any causality. And this is a nice word that they like to use, is causality. You can't, you know, you can't show the causality of exactly this happened. They ate this food and this happened. And, oh, my goodness, I can specifically show that this particular thing caused this particular illness. Well, you really can't do that. Well, we've got the labeling, but, well, certain things aren't labeled, but, oh, well, who cares? That's the strategy. That's two different strategies. I think you're right on the money. It's completely two different strategies. Over here, we had the president say, oh, yeah, it's substantially equivalent, end of story, bam, and we got flooded. Well, over there, it was a little bit different. More people had a little bit more on the ball and said, well, no. So then the other tactic had to be taken, just like Monsanto said on the website, oh, we're definitely for labeling. Well, of course they're for labeling there. They're against it here. They're for it there because that's the different tactic they're using. They have not given up on GMOs there. They are still infiltrating with GMOs. They're just using a slower method. It's still getting, it's like you take a math problem and you want to get to a specific, you know, what the end result is supposed to be, but there's several different methods used to get to that point. And you can use a different equation, a different formula, and arrive at the same conclusion. And that's exactly what they're doing. One formula for the United States, one formula for the EU, and it's taking a little bit longer. But unless somebody stands up, and, you know, the thing is, you guys have, you know, well, the EU has such an advantage because they're not growing everything. They're not flooded like we are. And that's such an advantage. And it just kind of breaks my heart to see that it's being eroded. And it's...
I know. So again, the cautionary principle that allegedly was there from the beginning is still not kind of protecting us. I remember a story coming out in mid-January about the EU to actually ban heirloom seeds and actually criminalize unregistered gardens. And I mean, again, this is what we've seen in the US really as well with the, you know, SWAT teams raiding farms and everything else. And now it's kind of, it's happening in the EU, well, but again, in a reverse kind of way, in a backward through the legal application first. You know, in the US has just been, hasn't been any legal paper there. They just do it and that's it kind of thing, you know? So very worrying.
Free market.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is not the free market.
No, it's not.
No, because once you're contaminated with GMOs, how free is your market?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not. It never has been. And with the way that's going, it never is going to be, unfortunately. So, you know, yeah.
Yeah, that's why it's an individual. It's an individual thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it has to be an individual thing. That's, if I can't influence anything other than my own, you know, sphere, then that is fine because I know that what I'm doing is ethical. I know that what I'm doing is the right thing. And that's kind of where, in my opinion, it has to emanate from. If you're not fighting against it, then you're basically laying down for it.
Absolutely. And then when those people, like you've just talked about, like yourself and other people, begin to produce on these principles, be there and support them, you know, and help them out. And again, because as they grow, they will be able to do more, they can produce more and make sure that more people are getting, you know, good stuff and good products. It's very important, I think, to begin that kind of positive feedback loop, if you will, in terms of how people who are have it on that level with understanding, they're ethical, they want to, you know, produce good stuff, that those people who have, instead of buying from the other competitor, go over, put your money into that positive, you know, sphere, if you will. And that's really, that's one of the biggest weapons I think that we do have, the fact that we can use the financial system that's there already to support those who are good and not support those who are bad and just begin there, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's kind of the way I live. Even as far as clothing goes, you know, I haven't bought any new clothing for, I don't know how long. Most of the clothing that I have is non-GMO because it was before GMO. And that, you know, I get down to that, you know.
Certainly. Oh, yeah. No, we've talked about that before. Radio 314 with Lana, she did the show about the, and not only that they're not GMO, they're flat out polyester, you know, endocrine disrupting chemicals that are sprayed on the clothes and everything else. It's just an amazing body of work and research that actually have been done on how bad clothes can be for you because your skin is an organ. It actually bypasses the liver, so it goes straight into your bloodstream. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of work and knowledge that needs to be spoken about when it comes to clothing. Absolutely.
Yeah. And, most people don't understand that your skin is an organ. So what happens? We put stuff on our skin, including cosmetics and soaps and all this stuff that, you know, is making us sick. You know what my regime is? I wash my hair with baking soda and I rinse it with an apple cider vinegar rinse. I use a paste of baking soda and coconut oil for a deodorant and for my teeth.
Yep, okay. Yep.
It's so important, because once you understand how your body functions and that your skin is an organ and you're absorbing all this stuff, then you look at all of the garbage and the GMO labeling issue. It wouldn't apply to, you know, stuff that you get that you put on your skin. It's not going to apply to that the stuff that's got cornstarch in it, or the stuff that's got the soy lecithin in it, or it's not going to apply to any of that stuff, or any of the stuff that, you know, your creams, your lotions, your deodorants, it's not going to apply to any of that stuff. And all that stuff is being absorbed directly into your system by the biggest organ that we have, our skin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, again, there's options out there, you know, I mean, 100% pure. They make cosmetics using all natural organic product, fruit pigmented cosmetics. They have skincare, hair care. Lana for Ready 314, our other sister show here, did an interview with the owner of 100% pure. And there are actually a lot of ladies and gentlemen as well out there who don't know that there are, you know, options and solutions there for cosmetics and, you know, shampoos and body wash and all these things that actually are really good, you know, and they're tested and stuff. So that's where people need to get into and realize that, you know, avoid the general store-bought crap with all the, you know, phthalates and sulfates and everything else in there, you know.
Yeah, and you don't have to be rich to do it.
No, of course not.
I mean, like, for me, every time I go to the store, I get baking soda. I get coconut oil. Those are my two, and vinegar, apple cider vinegar. Those are my three mainstays. I also use the apple cider vinegar with orange peels. I put the orange peels in a jar. I put the apple cider vinegar in it, and I let it sit for 10 days, and I have got acting counter cleaner. So, you know, and it's pure, it's simple, it's healthy. If I drop something on it, I can eat it off the counter.
Exactly. Well, that's the idea, right? If you can eat it, it's safe to put on your skin. If you can't eat it, don't put it on your skin.
Mm-hmm. Including GMOs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because a lot of people say, oh, if you buy organic, you have to be rich. You know, I'm sorry. But even when I was on a budget of $120 a month for food, you know, this is how I found out all of this stuff. This is how I found out how to not be sick and still be able to survive. This is how I found out about baking soda, coconut oil, about all this stuff. That's how I found out how to make that cleaner. And you know what? I'm telling you, it's been a blessing. When we went through that period, it was hard to go through. Man, I'll tell you, it was hard. But I'm so glad that I went through it, because if I hadn't have gone through it, then I wouldn't have learned. I wouldn't have learned how to do stuff on a very small budget that, you know, is healthy, healthier than when I was spending four times that much.
Yeah. And there's another level to this as well, which is, I'm glad you brought that up, because it has to do with, I believe in a way, and I've noticed this too, that you actually, if you kind of have cleaner food, more nutritious food, better food, you also need to eat less. That's another thing. I mean, if you eat a lot of food that has no, you know, minerals and vitamins and all the rest protein and in it, you need to eat more of that. And that's what happens. I think this overconsumption comes with the fact that there's so bad, the produce are so bad that people are, you know, stuffing their faces with this crap, you know, because they're not getting enough. And it's your body's way of saying, you know, you need more kind of thing. So I think if you kind of clean up yourself, if you go through that detox process, if you actually go for the GMO free option, if you go for the organic option and everything else, you end up actually eating less. So even if there are, and this is unfortunate, that's part of the FDA thing, I think as well, all these organic, you know, labels and everything else, that costs a lot as well for the producers to do that, because it doesn't actually cost more to produce organic. It's just that it's labeling, right? It's actually costs less, but nonetheless, you eat much less. And that's why I think that, again, you need to end up in a positive feedback loop, in a positive cycle, when you kind of learn your body, you clean up, and, you know, you detox and everything. So it's all pluses with it all the way.
Yes, all pluses. And I'll tell you, you know, as you get older, you start, you know, walking into a room and forgetting why you walked in there. And I found out that since I've, you know, started doing all this and cleaning up, that my mental clarity has gotten a lot better.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, it has gotten so much better. I am more alert. I have more energy. I just feel so much better. And if you're not healthy, then you can't appreciate anything, because health is so important. If you're sick all the time, or you've constantly got a nagging tummy ache, or you've constantly got a horrible headache, or a something, then you can't think. You can't think clearly. You can't make rational decisions. And it affects your entire life and those people around you. So it's a matter of self-preservation, yourself to the point where you're, you know, feeling good. And what they have is they have these artificial constructs. Okay, well, you're not feeling good. Oh, you're feeling tired? Then go ahead and take this little energy shot, sugar-free. You find it at the 7-Eleven or whatever store, you know, little convenience store. They have them all over the place, those little red bottles. I don't know what they're, can't remember what they're called, but something energy, and you're supposed to take a shot of that and go like crazy. Well, yeah, okay, yeah. What happens when you crash? Because nothing in there is good for you. It's just like having a caffeine high. Okay, well, I'm going to go ahead and drink 5 cups of coffee so I can be alert, so I can do this. And after that coffee hits you, and then you've gone up on this gigantic high, then you hit the low.
Yeah.
And when you hit that crash, you're done. But when you get healthy, and when you start working, you know, your food and your whatever you're putting on your body and all of this stuff, and start getting back to a more natural, you know, place without all these chemicals, then you start getting that same high without the chemicals, and you understand that it's all artificial. They don't want you healthy, you know, continually. The corporations do not want us healthy continually. The medical establishment does not want us healthy, because we need to go get that coffee every day. We need to pay them for that coffee every day, just so we can feel like we have enough energy to do something. It keeps consumers going. And if they don't want us, the doctors, they get paid if we're sick. They only get paid if we're sick. They don't get paid if we're healthy.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's logic. It's only logic. And they say, oh, no, no, the doctor wants to make me healthy. No, he doesn't want to make you healthy. He wants to keep you coming to his office so he can have his Mercedes. That's it.
Yeah, yeah. They should get paid when they heal you, right? Make you better.
When you start feeling a little better because they gave you a happy pill, which
isn't quite
so happy. Because if you take too many of these happy pills, well, you'll get depressed. And then you'll have to take another happy pill to counteract that.
Oh my God. Well, again, we're back to that initial, problem that we've been talking about, personal responsibility, that no one else is going to do this for you. The development of the lifestyle overall is a stupid one. It's been, well planned around us. And if we're not willing to kind of step out of those boundaries, I think we're going to be a lot of trouble. But it goes back again to what you said before, Barbara. It has to do with something that shakes you out of that hypnosis, out of that trance, that makes you, you know, wake up and realize what is really going on, what's, you know, who am I? What am I doing? what do I put in my body? What do I put on my body? What do I, you know, think about? All these things. It's very much related. And that's the state that most people have to come to start doing something about this stuff.
Yes, yes. And the more people that start doing it, you know, a friend asked me the other day, she says, well, you know, what's gonna happen if these guys really succeed and they destroy most of the planet with all their chemicals and all their GMOs and all this stuff like that? She said, well, what's going to happen? I said, there's always pockets that survive. Okay, so if you're going to get down to the worst case scenario, there's always pockets that survive. Like if you try and get rid of a bacterial infection, 9 times out of 10, there's always little survivors in there. You can't really get all of the pockets of bacteria out. I want to be one of those little bacteria. If it gets down to that point, I want to be in a pocket of survival. And the more people that get into that and are, you know, then the more friends I'm going to have. Okay, the more people that I'll be with me. Okay, in that little pocket of survival, and, you know, the better chance we will have to turn this thing around, because they can't get rid of all of us. They simply can't get rid of all of us. That's just not the way things work. Anytime you look at a little bacterial culture, you know, and you'll put something in there supposed to kill all the bacteria, it rarely ever kills all the bacteria. There's little ones that remain. Yeah. It's like when you worm a horse, it'll remain. I want to be the resistant one. Okay, I want to be the resistant weed that grows up in the middle and says, ha 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 ha, you didn't get me. You know, and the more of us there are, you know, then the better chance we'll have, and we'll turn this darn thing around. That's what has to happen. And I don't care how bad it gets, it's going to turn around.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's a very good point, Barbara, and it's an encouraging one as well on top of that. So before we begin to wrap things up then for this time, but is there anything else you'd like to leave us with, or what are you working on next here? Something specific coming up? Of course, we want to relay people further to the website so they know where to go, and they, you know, you have a lot of articles published there and on a regular basis as well. But yeah, what's going on? What's next for you?
Well, there's two things that I'm working on at this point. I've got a little YouTube video that I want to put together, but I need somebody with animation skills to help me out, and I can do the graphics, but I've got a little guy that I created, and I call him MJ Sprout, and he's it's going to be a takeoff, well, a parody on a Michael Jackson song. So I've got this little sprout, and he's got Michael Jackson's stuff on him. He's got his coat, jacket, and his hat, and he's got the glove and the whole nine yards, and it's Just Ban It. It's a takeoff on the Just Label It. So this is Just Ban It. We have a right to be GM free. And I would like to do a video on that, just, you know, for so people can get through entertainment, whatever, so they can start thinking about that. And another project is Nick Brannigan is got some little startup on doing 100% organic cotton, non-GMO T-shirts, and Farm Wars is getting its own brand. So I'm kind of happy about that.
Cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's the way to be. That's the place to get into it. And again, offering those you know, good products. And again, the getting away from the polyester and everything else that they spray on there, it's really important. I'm going to link up a show that we did about that on 314 for people who want to listen more to that, by the way, if you're interested in that, because there's some really, really interesting science and data behind that. But yeah, in the meantime then, Barbara, we say let's give out the website again, farmwars.info. That's the place to go. Check out the news there and everything else. And in the meantime, we say thank you, Barbara Peterson, for coming on with us, and hope we can talk more again in the future sometime.
You're very welcome. Would love to.
That wraps up our program for today, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed our conversation today and got something from it. We say thank you for listening and for your membership. My thanks to the Red Ice crew. That's Frederick, Lana, Elizabeth, and John. We'll be back then in just a few. Radio 314 with Keith Preston is up next. Then we have Karen Hudes, a former World Bank employee on Red Ice Radio. And also David Icke and Daniel Estelin is on after that. Have a good one. Until next time, take care, and we'll speak to you soon.